The following session is from the 2022 NCHE Thrive Homeschool Conference. For additional recordings, visit nche.com.
Let's do this thing. Okay, I'm going to walk this aisle. If you want to switch over here, you're welcome to do so. I will do my best to include all of you people, but I have an aversion to this thing. So I'm going to move around because I have a lot of nervous energy. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I'm Rachel Carman, and I am the homeschool mother of seven. And I am here this weekend to retire. This weekend on Saturday, I will speak at my youngest son's graduation after 26 years of home education. What a ride it has been. So yeah, but it gets better than that. So I came to this conference 26 years ago, and I did not want to be here. Anybody willing to say that's true for you today? I get it. Didn't want to come. Homeschooling was not for me. It was for somebody else, anybody else, but it was not for me. You people were weird. But through a series of circumstances, our oldest son, who is the primary example of what we're going to talk about today, that kid, the one that I was like, please, 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 I need time away from that kid, right? He was my oldest. And through a set of circumstances that could only be attributed to the Almighty, we pulled him out of the public school system and brought him home. And for the first year, I cried a lot. He cried a lot, right? And I talk about that a little bit more in my session tomorrow. Attention, obsessive, compulsive, perfectionist, control freaks, chill out. So we'll cover some more of that tomorrow. But all that to say, at the end of that first year, I was looking forward to putting him back in the system. I was just trying to survive kindergarten. I was thinking, one, two, three, four, five, January, February, March. Surely I can't screw up kindergarten, right? And there was this couple at our church who'd been watching us. We only had three at the time. And she said, look, would you go to the homeschool conference if we watched your kids and paid for your way to go and for your hotel? I'd do a lot of things if you would do that, right? So she paid. She and her husband took our three kids and paid for us to come to the NCHE conference. I didn't want to be here. Someone paid me to come. And so I dutifully went to registration and got my name tag. And being the great little legalist I was going to go to a workshop so that I could say that I went. Right? I was going to keep the letter of the law. I said I would go. Here I am. I'm going. So I have my name tag. My husband's with me. We did not even look at the program. All of these rooms were full of speakers. We literally said, let's just go to this one. Because we were going to go to one and then enjoy the weekend. We went to one workshop, and we were stuck in the middle. We didn't know we were going to be stuck in the middle. It was one of those things we sat down, and then would you all scoot to the middle? And I was like, I don't want to scoot to the middle. But we scooted to the middle, and the speaker started speaking, and the Holy Spirit fell. And he started talking. The man who was the speaker at the time was Chris Davis, and he started talking about, are you filling a bucket or lighting a fire? And he cast a vision for home education, and my life has never been the same. It's kind of a homecoming for me this weekend to be here with you. And I'm very grateful to be here with you. And I want you to know off the bat, here's my prayer for you this weekend. I don't have to know your name because the Almighty does, but I've been praying for you, and this is my prayer, that you don't leave this place the same person that you came. That's my prayer for you. I don't know if you want to be here. I don't know if you're ticked or you're tired or you're overwhelmed or you're lonely or if you're all of the above. I'm praying that you will dare to lean in to this weekend and let God have his way with you. Because that is what he's in the business of doing. So we are here today in this session to talk about that child. Now, I love this because if I say the phrase that child, if you have one, you know exactly what I mean. If you're sitting there going, I'm just not sure. You don't have one. I just want to be clear off the bat. If you're having to wonder, you don't have one. Because if you have one, you want to stand on your chair, jump up and down, and somebody give you credit. Right? Because that child does that to you. As we get started, I want you to consider what face pops into your mind when I say that child. Now, one thing I want to do, and we're going to do this, I'll try to start this over here. I have a file folder full of names of that child. Everywhere I speak on this, I pass this list around. And I ask you, if you're willing, to put the name of your that child on the list. And I covenant and promise to pray over it for you. I have lists in here that are years and years old, and I still pray over these names. I have one mom who put 9 names on the list. I pray for her a lot. I have one name on the list. A mother named her son Maximus, and I'm like, girlfriend, you did that to yourself. I can't help that. So let's not name them that, okay? Don't make it worse. But I want you to consider as we're starting, what name pops in to your head? What little precious face? My objective in this session is that you'll see them differently. That you can get a new perspective. That, dare I say it, that you can get his perspective. Which face? Some of you might be blessed with more than one. Can I get an amen? I didn't just get a male one. I got a female one. Yeah. Some of them are that for life. They arrive on the scene, ticked off at the world. Some of them come into it like around 10. Some of them get out of it, praise Jesus. Right? But I want you to have that face in your head as we go through this today. So here's the top 10 you might have of that child if. Ready? They demand all of your time. They demand all of your time and time you don't have. Right? All of your time. Their mood is completely unpredictable. They might wake up and actually be happy. You're like, this is awesome. How long will this last? Not long. Right? It's completely unprepared. You don't know who's coming out of their room in the morning. You don't know what it is that trips them up. If you cannot hear them, you need to find them. So in our family, I have 2 sons, 3 daughters, and 2 boys on the end, right? I have friends who had daughters first. And we would get together and they would talk about how their daughters would have tea parties for hours on end. It's like, I didn't get the ticket to that show. I have 2 sons first, right? One time, Charles, my oldest, my TC, affectionately referred to as, had a friend over. And I realized that I could not see them, nor could I hear them. I called for them. Did they respond? I found them at the back of the house painting the house. There was paint. There was a house. 2 things that go great together. Their thinking rather rarely precedes their acting. Graduation seems really far off. So in one of what I refer to as our worst years, and so there are bad days with a TC, there are bad weeks with a TC, there are bad years with a TC. And I had a particularly bad year, okay? So, like, we're supposed to be done with the school year, and I'm on Saxon math lesson 6. Bad year, right? Why? Because I'm doing character the whole time. I'm doing sibling stuff the whole time, right? And someone said to me, you need to go to a homeschool graduation. I'm like, yeah, but no one's going to make it that far. Why would I go? And she goes, no, you just need to go and be inspired by what's possible. So I did. I went. One of the things about having a TC is they humble you. And they make you teachable in ways that you were before not teachable. You're willing to listen. If someone told you if you would eat a sweet potato every day of your life, you're that child would behave, you would do it. So this person said I needed to go to graduation. I am there. And I was nursing somebody. I don't remember who it was. And Davis and I were on the end of the row. I nursed the baby. Baby got fussy. Davis took the baby out. I am sitting by a stranger now. And they parade the graduates onto stage. And I start crying. And this stranger, this woman next to me, she puts her arm around me and she goes, oh, honey, oh, baby, which one's yours? I said, none of them. But you know what I know now? There were TCs in that group. And there were moms who were just so grateful for that moment. If you need a vision, go to a homeschool graduation. Great things are possible. Nothing seems to work with a TC. You have read every parenting book. You have listened to every podcast. They make it sound so simple. Right? But nothing seems to work. And if it does work, it works one time. Not working time number two. Somewhere they're keeping a secret tally under their bed, right? Today, mother did this and I fell for it, right? And then they tuck it up under the mattress. You worry about how they are affecting the other children. Boy, I did. I remember my second son, Anderson, when Charles would do a raging fit, right? For no apparent reason. He would just rage. And Anderson, dear sweet Anderson, would come to me crying, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And I remember many times crying with Anderson, and I said, I don't either, Anderson, but I know one thing we can do, and we can pray for him. We can pray for him. They're best friends today. They're 32 and 29. Anderson won't let me call him 30 yet. They know all of your buttons, and they can push them all at once. Right? They do. They know. And they have this ability to push them all simultaneously. Discipline dominates every day. When Charles was little, one of the strategies that I used to discipline him was I would take away his favorite toys when he disobeyed. But I would not put them where he could not see them. I would display them on the mantle where he could long to have them. So I would take away his favorite toy and I would put it on the mantle, and then we would progress through the day and he would disobey again. I would take away his next favorite toy and put it on the mantle. Are you seeing my mantle? My husband can come in, look at the door, the mantle, and instantly know what kind of day we've had. Everything's teetering and tottering on the mantle, right? You can probably add some to that list. It's one of my favorites. So this is my TC. Look how innocent he looks. Isn't he cute? I'm pregnant with his brother. He was in a wedding. And this is when it was first really coming out. I mean, he's 2.5 in this picture. And it was really intense. That's the little face that pops into my head when I think about all of this. So here's what we want. So everybody, look, I've got 3 grandkids, and I will double that number this year. I'll have 6 by the end of the year. When we're pregnant, subconsciously or maybe consciously, we think we know what we want, right? So here's a list of what we want. We want kids to be obedient. Anybody? Come on now. Let's be honest. We want them to be obedient. We want them to be compliant, responsible, helpful, cooperative, quiet, still, smart, calm, reasonable, reasonable. Cute, funny, sweet, docile, polite, neat, honest, endearing, and friendly. Anybody? That sounds like a great kid. If you've got that model number, you need to sell it on the open market. I actually do have a couple like that. But guess what we get? Here you go. Energetic, passionate, precocious, They correct adults. They are rash. They are active. They're argumentative. They're verbal. They question everything. They are open-minded. They are dreamers. They're sensitive. They're artistic. They're determined. They're stubborn. But they're diligent in what they want to be. They're dominating, imaginative, messy, and coy. Fair enough? I just want to back it up a little bit. They are incredibly sensitive. Incredibly sensitive. I got a text today from, I've got three out of seven. Come on now. One just turned 20, and he's texting me today, "Mom, pray for me." He's this big old soccer playing 6'4", 185 kid with this huge heart, right? He's so sensitive, and he's that whole list, and he's sensitive, and we forget that. We forget that. So here's the alternative. Normal. Remember the Incredibles? I could do a whole session on the Incredibles. I keep saying that I've got to do it. You've got an intact family that functions best when they are all operating within their gifting. Pretty awesome. And it's Pixar. So remember what Violet says? Normal. I just want to be normal. What does our family know about being normal? Let's listen to this. Usual or ordinary, not strange, not deviating from the norm, rule or principle, conforming to a type, standard, or regular pattern characterized by average. The antonym is extraordinary. And I just want to tell you, we're called to be extraordinary. Throughout Scripture, we're called to be extraordinary. And that's what we have in these kids. This is how they make you feel. You want to pull your hair out. You find yourself yelling. You never thought you would do that. They break you. I remember so many times just on my face. There's a specific place in my house. There's a little sofa there, and I would just be there on my face, just a hot mess. I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm supposed to be doing this, right? Help. The alternative to the bottom left is the bottom right. You can get ticked off and resentful. We're warned against that in Scripture. Let not a root of bitterness spring up among you. It's a choice. And we can be that way. I talked to a woman, a mom of five, after one of these sessions, and she said, "I totally get what you're saying. I don't want to." Woo! God gives us a choice. And sometimes we choose poorly. You have a choice. If you believe in a sovereign, mighty God of the universe who does nothing on accident or random, then that child was sent to your house on time, on purpose, for his glory and your good. That's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. And you can be ticked off about it, or you can ask God, show me, teach me. I want to know. I want to know. I want to know. The top 10 things we say to that child. Ready? Number 10, what were you supposed to be doing? See, in this session, we have to have a little bit of levity because it gets too deep. Okay, number 9. How many times do I have to tell you? I have a really good friend that she had a TC. We were raising TCs simultaneously, and we were really good friends at the time. And she said, she called me one day, and she goes, "You've got to use this story." And I said, "Oh, well, do tell." She said, 7:30, my son is out of bed, and he is already in a mood. And he's just picking at his brothers and his sister. And I called my husband. And I got on the phone with my husband, and I'm going, "You're not going to believe what he did this morning. It's only 7:32. He's been up for 5 minutes, and he's already..." And she said, and I just ranted and ranted and ranted and ranted. And finally, when I stopped talking, my husband, I said, "How many times do I have to say it?" And my husband just said, "Honey, that's your job." Woo! He's right. I want to ask you something. How many times does God have to tell you he loves you? How many ways does he have to show you his grace and his faithfulness and his goodness? He is faithful and he is good. He is a rinse and repeat God. He does it over and over and over and over and over and over and over because that's who he is and that's who he's called you to be as a mom. To dare to say it one more time. Number 8, pay attention. I remember taking his little face in my hands, right? You've done this, right? Look at me, right? Pay attention, because they're just like, not, the lights are on, but no one's home, right? 7, be still, which you would not give. I remember at night when Charles was asleep in his bed, he always slept on the top bunk, and I would go in and I would watch him sleep and I would cry. Like, he's so still. Look at that, he's capable of being still, right? Just be still. Oh, sorry, went the wrong way. Da-da. Number 6, are you listening? The answer's no. You can ask, but they're really not. They're really not. Number 5, slow down. How many things happen because they're just in a rush? They're doing it so fast. I used to joke that my son Charles, my TC, was a microwave, and my son Anderson, my second born, was a crock pot, right? Charles was going to get it cooked, and he was going to get it done, but who's going to want to eat that? And then Anderson's going to overdo it, right? Opposite ends of the spectrum. Number 4, really? Number 3, no. I want to encourage you. I read an article a few years ago. It's been a few years ago, although I think it's still trending. I'm not sure, and I'm old-fashioned. I'm old enough to do that now, be old-fashioned. Have the courage to say no. There's been this trend to be a yes mom, meaning you don't say no or you find ways not to say no. Your kids need you to love them enough to say no. There need to be some things that you say no. Yes, say yes when you can, but have the courage to say no. Our God loves us enough to give us 10 specific no's in the Old Testament. Come on now. There are things that we should not do. And your kids are depending on you to say no. Don't be a wuss. You'll raise a wimp. And you were called to raise a warrior. Number 2, stop. And number 1, what were you thinking? And they weren't. We've already established that, right? Okay. So I want to paint a picture for you. I want to suggest to you that one of my favorite biblical characters, who is Peter, I want to suggest to you that Peter is the consummate that child in the Old Testament. His story arc is perfect when it comes to looking at a TC. It's remarkable. Peter is the one that Jesus looks over. He's following Jesus. John has said, follow him. And Jesus turns around and sees Peter following him, and basically Jesus says, what do you want? And instead of answering the question, Peter goes, where are you staying? Right? That's Peter. Peter is the one who, when Jesus is walking on water, Peter is the one who says to Jesus, you call me, and I will come. In other words, Jesus is going, Peter's going, I want to do that. Give me permission to do that. Give me whatever it is that I need to do that. And Jesus says, come. There were 11 other disciples in the boat, and no one else volunteered. Peter did. Peter did, because that's what Peter does, right? Peter is remarkable. You'll also remember that Jesus, one time with the disciples, he looks at the disciples and he goes, so, Who do the people say that I am? Oh, well, some people say you're the prophet. Some people say you're Elijah. And Jesus looks at them and says, no. Who do you say I am? And it's Peter who speaks up and says, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. He got who Jesus was. Shortly after that in the biblical narrative, you've got the transfiguration. And who goes to the mountain, on top of the mountain, with Jesus? The inner circle, the three, Peter, James, and John. And they get up there and they see Jesus transfigured, and it's Peter again. Shocking. It's Peter again who says, oh, we got to stay right here. I will build booth and we will stay here. I feel like it's Peter that may have caused our Messiah to hand plant on more than one occasion. Like, dude, no, that's not what we're, no. Right? It's Peter. Peter is the one who, though he was able to say, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God, it's also Peter that when Jesus said, I must go and I must suffer and I must die, Peter says, then don't go. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan. He's commended and he's confronted by Christ. And then you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, Well, let me back up before that. Let's get to the washing of the feet. We got the washing of the feet. Jesus is doing what the lowest person in the room should have been doing. The servant should have been doing. And instead of asking someone else to do the icky, yucky job. Look, the first thing I kissed when my kids were born were their toes. Why? Because they were up in my ribs. And I would get up and I would just kiss all their little toes. I love their toes. But right around 13 or 14, I ain't doing that no more. Those toes get hairy and stinky and gritty and gross, and I'm not doing it anymore. Your Lord and Master got down on his knees, and he started washing their feet. Yes, he did. And when he got to Peter, Peter in all righteousness goes, you're not washing my feet. You'll notice that Peter didn't volunteer to take over what Jesus was doing. That's notable. No, Peter just says, you're not washing my feet. Another head plant moment. And Jesus says, Peter, if I don't wash your feet, you will have no part of me. And then what does Peter say? Then wash my whole body. I mean, you got to love this guy. You got to love him. So Jesus goes, no, that's not necessary. Not going to do that. Then they go to the garden, right? Jesus asks them to pray. He pulls the inner circle out, asks them to pray. Three times he finds them sleeping, right? Finally he comes back, and here comes his betrayer. And it's Peter who lashes out against the mob who's trying to arrest Jesus. It's Peter who pulls out a knife and hacks off Malchus's ear because, you know, at that general time, if you really wanted to get at somebody, you hacked off their ears. No! He was going for his throat, and Malcolm ducked. Peter was rash. And again, Jesus goes, put it away. Put it away. And he does his next to the last miracle, the last being his resurrection. And he heals Malchus. It's amazing. Jesus has already predicted that Peter will deny the Christ three times. And in that inner courtyard, three times, someone comes up to Peter. And three times, progressively more intently, three times, he says, yeah, no, no, didn't know him. After the resurrection, the women come. They're knocking on the door. The tomb is empty. The tomb is empty. Who do we have that goes to the tomb? We have John and Peter. Traditionally, John the youngest, Peter the oldest. They race to the tomb, right? John tells us that he won. Peter comes after John. John is respectfully standing outside of the empty tomb. What does Peter do? He goes in because he's Peter. He goes in. And then we have this glorious interaction with Jesus and Peter on the seashore when Jesus looks at Peter. Peter, do you love me? You know that I love you. Feed my sheep. Peter, do you love me? Lord, you know I love you. Tend my lambs. Peter, do you love me? Feed my sheep. Three affirmations, one for each denial. Wow. Jesus ascends, and on the day of Pentecost, in Acts it says, and Peter took his stand. What a story arc. Do you see it? Do you see it? It's remarkable. Let me outline it for you. Peter's a work in progress. I want to give you a perspective for your TC. Peter was easily a TC. That whole list, rash, passionate, curious, confident, all of those things. He starts out as curious. John said to follow, okay. I don't know what this is. He progresses to cocky. Right? He thinks he's got it figured out. And then he gets confused. What just happened? And then he's changed. And on the day of Pentecost, he's confident. I believe that this is the opportunity that awaits you. Maybe different words. But I think the story of Peter is quite inspiring when it comes to raising a TC. All is not lost. They are not doomed. You are not doomed. There's an opportunity here. We need Peters. We need Daniels. We need Esthers. We need Marys. We need Ruths. We need young men and women who dare to stand up when everybody sits down or when everybody bows down. We need Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. We will not bow down, they said, when everybody else was bowing down. We need a generation that's going to stand. And that's the opportunity we have because TCs are leaders. They just are. They just are. And we have an opportunity to craft them into leaders who are going to stand on the mighty name of Jesus Christ. The opportunity is to raise world changers. And I'm just going to tell you today, world changers is a wide definition. It does not mean that they become president, although right about now we could stand to have a good one. We need some statesmen. We don't have statesmen anymore, or very few. We need statesmen. We need leaders. We need moms and dads who dare to dig it out every day at home. We need moms who dare to change another diaper. World changers are not just in the upper echelons of society. They are across every possible part of our culture. And that's what world changers are. They're the ones who weed their garden, who mow their grass, who take a casserole. Those are world changers. That's what I mean by a world changer. Word of caution. There is no formula for this, but only faith. I really wish, and some of you may have come this weekend. I know that I did. I came subsequent years after I decided I was going to do this. I came to homeschooling conferences because I was going to figure it out, right? And really what I was looking for is I wanted a magic wand. Or maybe a little bowl of pixie dust. I'm going to tell you, I've been doing it for 26 years. Neither one of those things exist. And I'm not holding out on you. If I had one, I'd give it to you. We'd all share it and have a great time. But that's not the point. The point is faith, growing our faith. There's no convention, but there is consistency and constancy, doing the same thing over and over and over and over. Jamie Smith talks about this in his book, The Recalibration of Our Hearts in You Are What You Love. It's a powerful idea. Doing things over and over and over has a powerful influence on our lives. There is no program for this, but there is progress. And this is how it's going to feel. 5 steps forward and 28 backward. And 2 forward and 1 back. And 3 right. But there's progress. There's progress. And there's no normal. No 2. Look, we all want to be treated like individuals, right? No 2 of us are the same. But we are all known by the Almighty. All of us. And you're that child is known. And God has a plan for him or for her. And his plan for him or for her is to change the world for his glory and their good. That is his plan. So before we go any further, I need to tell you this story. So for years, I've been speaking at homeschool conferences, and I was telling stories on Charles. And I would call him, you know, that child, and I would tell a story, and everybody would laugh. And one day, I was at a conference. We used to travel as an amoeba, me, my husband, and all 7 of our children, because we own Apologia, if you don't know that. And so we would go to all these conferences, right? And this is what we would do. So at the end of the conference, I've spoken at this conference. We're circling up because our tradition at the end of a conference was we always had pizza night. The kids were exhausted. I was exhausted. Davis was exhausted. We ordered pizza, right? And we watched the Nature Channel back when they actually did nature on the Nature Channel. That's a conversation for another day. Anyway, we're standing around as a family talking, and this mom comes up. She comes up to me and she goes, "That's him, isn't it? I have one too. He drives me crazy." And she walked off. I felt like someone had just broadsided us. And my son, my TC, was 12. And he looked at me with tears in his eyes and he said, "What did you say? What did you tell her?" And in that moment, I was under incredible conviction, and I turned to him and I said, "I am so sorry." And I realized that I had been doing something that was wrong. I had been telling stories on my son for a laugh and a joke, and my audience loved it, but I had been doing it when he was not old enough for me to do that or give me permission. So I shut it down. I did not tell any TC stories for at least 10 years. 10 years? 11 years. Until he went off to college. That conference year, I had all of these people coming up to me going, "Hey, you don't tell your TC stories anymore. We haven't heard, you know, anything." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. I shouldn't have done that. It was, you know, I don't know. I have one. You really need to talk about that." So all conference season, everybody's saying, because it's kind of a weird thing. People record these things and then people buy them and then they listen to them. And so everybody seemed to know about this, right? So Charles came home from college that year and I said to him, "I need to ask you something. And I want to tell you, first of all, you can say no. I mean, but I need to ask you something." He goes, "What is it?" And I said, "Well, you know, I had a really busy conference season this year, and it was really remarkable and everything, but I got a lot of moms asking about TC. Do you remember that conference? I think it was in Idaho when that happened." He goes, "Yeah." He laughed it off. He goes, "Yeah, I do remember that." And I said, "Yeah, and I apologize again. That was just wrong." He goes, "No." He goes, "What's your question?" I said, "I'm kind of sensing that maybe I need to blow the dust off of this thing and really talk to these moms who have a TC because they're tired and they're lonely and they're overwhelmed." He got up from behind the bar and he came over to his mom and he put his hands on my shoulder and he said, "Mom," he's taller than me, he says, "Mom, go and tell our story. And tell those moms not to give up on us." I'm here today with Charles's full permission. He's 32. He's married. He has 2 of my grandkids. They're expecting a 3rd. He's working on a PhD. I can't promise any of that to you. But I can tell you, but by God's grace, God has done a marvelous work in him. And if he was here today, he would tell you, whatever you do, don't give up on them. Don't give up on them. So I've got some more stories to share with you about Charles, and I'm doing so with his full permission. So 3 points to our outline that I'm going to give you today. Three, I'll start with E. Number one, I want to challenge you to embrace your TC. If they're here this weekend, I want you after this session to find them, and I want you to cuddle their face in your hands, and I want you to say this. I'm going to script you. I'm so glad God sent you to our family. I love you so. That's your line. Tears dripping off your chin. I'm so glad God sent you to our family. I want you to embrace them. Look, here's the deal. We think they don't know we don't like them. They're not that stupid. Look, we love them. We're supposed to. We're obligated to. We're the mom. They're our kid, right? We love them. But the reality is we don't like them. And here's the problem with that. They get that message. We need to dare to embrace them fully, totally, as the gift that they are from the hand of God. The Bible teaches us that children are a blessing from the hand of the Lord. And it doesn't change because they're a TC. Your focus for embracing is prayer. Pray. I've actually got a card that I'm going to give you when you leave, and it's got a prayer on the back of it. So you'll get to take that home because I had a mom come up to me going, yeah, I don't know how to do that. And I'm like, okay, we'll work on that. This is all about an attitude adjustment. See, the world tells you to complain about them. The world tells you it's not fair. The world tells you that you deserve better. Look, you and I deserve nothing but the wrath of a holy, mighty God. It's not but the blood of Jesus. Right? We need an attitude of judgment in how we look at these kids, and we need to thank God for them. Here are the keys. Embrace the opportunity to parent them. This is an opportunity. God is extending to you an opportunity to raise a world changer. We had a dear friend who was dying of cancer. She had had it the first time, stage 4, and she beat it, right? And then it came back with a vengeance. And I will never forget the last Sunday that she was at church. We all came up and we laid hands on her. We were praying. There was not a dry eye in the room. And her husband laid hands on her. And he said, God, thank you for choosing us. Thank you for choosing us. What if you dared to thank God for choosing you? To bless you with a TC. You need to embrace the adventure of raising a kid who's different. My experience with my TC has been this. They can connect dots that I don't even see. I mean, seriously. It is remarkable to me what they can do. They are not always great at filling in dots, meaning on tests. You know why? Because they're bored. But they can make connections and they can see things the rest of us cannot see. And you know what we do? We shut them down. We shut them down. I remember one time I took Charles and Anderson. I was nursing Savannah, and it's a very significant part of the story because I was that mom who nursed in public. Because otherwise I was never going to be in public, right? So I was sitting at the back of the library room. This is back when you could actually take your children to the library for reading hour. And Charles always sat on the front row. So the woman is on the front row. She's reading to the kids. Charles and Anderson are on the very front row. I'm in the back because I'm that weird mom nursing her infant. So I'm sitting all the way in the back. They get through this story and she has to pat Charles down several times, right? You with me? Because he keeps wanting to see. She's showing the picture, but he wants, yeah. So she's up there. I'm back here nursing. She gets to the end of the book, and she made a fatal mistake. Children, are there any questions? And from the back of the room in slow motion, I was like this, no. Don't ask that. Right? Because you know what? He asked a question. And her response was, boys and girls, if you don't have a question about the story we just read. And I'm in the back of the room going, oh, honey. He's on topic. You just can't see it from where you are. But if you would dare to ask him how he got there from where you are, you would be amazed. But that's one of the ways we shut them down. We don't. They say something and it seems like it's not connected. And I'm going to tell you right here and right now, it is. It is. I don't think I have time to read it, but from my younger TC, my son that texted me earlier, he did that to me one time. I think we were reading the Scarlet Letter out loud, and he made some comment, and I was like, what in the world? And I looked at him, and I said, can you get me to where you are? And he did. He goes, well, we were reading about this, and it made me think about this, and then I thought about this, and then we did this, and he could get me there. And in that moment, I have an opportunity to value him, to validate him, or I can say, shut up and get on topic. Or I can empower him to be who he's made to be. That's the opportunity. We need to embrace our role to support and advocate for them. Other people are not going to get them. Because why? They take time. I've had to advocate for my TC on more than one occasion with physicians who just want to medicate to make it easier. There are times, but it's not all the time. It's not all the time. And I'm going to boldly say it should not be the first thing we do. There ought to be other things that we consider to do. And I'm just going to tell you, they're harder things. I've had to advocate with him, with teachers, with co-ops, with a variety of different things. I get to embrace that role. He needs to know that I'm on his team. We're not against each other. We're shoulder to shoulder. We're on the same team, fighting the same issue for the glory of God. Number two, engage with them. Dare to engage with them. You're going to embrace them, give them a big old hug. You're so glad that God sent them to you, and then you're going to dare to engage with them, and your focus on this one is time. Yes, they take time. A lot of time. And this is a priority adjustment. In other words, there may be other things that you thought you needed to do, that you wanted to do, but you're going to get to change those things. And you're going to seek God's will for them, with them. Three things. Engage with them by providing a safe place for them. Your home ought to be the safest place on the planet for your TC. It ought to be a place where they are heard and listened to, where their questions are safe, where you dare to have conversations, when they ask things that terrify you, like, what if God's really not real? What if the Muslim faith is true? Your home ought to be a place where their questions are safe. And you dare to engage with them. You need to engage with them by enlisting the help of others. Get this, you can't do this by yourself. So when our kids turn 16, the high school-ish, we endeavored to get them all mentors. Because this is what I know, and let me tell you if you do not know, there are other people in the sphere of influence of your kids that are going to get all of the credit for all of those glorious things you've been telling them their whole life. That's how it works. Why? Because the other person's cooler and hipper than you are. I remember this happened. God dropped a mentor into our life for Charles. He was a seminary student who was studying philosophy. And oh, my goodness, he would pick up Charles and they would go to Starbucks. They would talk about the woodiness of the coffee and they would talk about philosophy. I'm drowning here. So I'm so happy that he's got Kyle. They would be there for hours. I was so grateful for Kyle. Then I would go back to pick Charles up, and this is what would happen. I'm driving down the road, and Charles said, Mom, you're not going to believe what Kyle said today. And I'm like, do tell. And he proceeds to tell me something that I have been saying to him his entire life. Oh, in that moment, I am so tempted to be so ticked. But in that moment, I am literally making the decision as I'm driving, trying to avoid the trees. Dear Jesus, thank you that he finally heard it. Enlist pastors, other young men, young women that you know are cooler and hipper than you. Send them to Summit Worldview Camp, where they will listen to a variety of other speakers who are cooler and hipper than you. And they will say all of the things that you've said, they'll just say it in cooler and hipper ways. You need help. So engage with them by getting help. And then participate with them. I won't give a name. My youngest son will graduate on Saturday, and he's 18. So you can do the math. My kids still play with Legos. My kids still listen to Adventures of an Odyssey. True story. They do some things, and you know what they want? They want me to do it with them. My son can do the Rubik's Cube in under 3 seconds. And he's confident that he can teach me. I'm just not buying that. I don't think that that's going to happen. But he loves it. He loves it when I will sit down and he will show me an algorithm. He loves that. Dare to do things with them. Dare to engage with them, to be interested in what they're interested in. That is the coolest thing to them. It's saying, I value you. Engage with them in that way. Next. I'm going to double dog dare you to just enjoy them. How about that? You might have come here today thinking that was absolutely impossible, but I'm going to suggest to you it's really not. You are one attitude adjustment away from actually enjoying this kid. You can do this. And the whole focus here is releasing them. Let go of you. Let go of you. Embrace God and them. A whole world, another animated film reference, right? I think it's Ratatouille. Once you muscle your way past the gag reflex, a whole world opens up. Well, you know, if you muscle yourself past you, a whole world opens up. So release yourself from you. The focus adjustment, you got to celebrate God's blessing of them. Have a party. This is a huge, substantial change. This is the kid that you spend more time being ticked off in. This is the kid. That kid is the one. I have moms come up going, yeah, I'd homeschool, but not that one. Ooh. Hear me. That one is exactly the one you need to homeschool. The institution's killing them. Killing them. My oldest Charles went to public school for 13 of the longest days of his life. I was in heaven. He was gone, and I was thrilled. Do you hear it? That's ugly. And I watched him come home every day from school, deader and deader and deader. They were killing his passion and his curiosity and his joy. That kid is exactly why you should do this. Three keys. Enjoy their perspective. And dare to chase it. Like I said earlier, they are going to see things differently. If you're in a discussion at your dining room table, and I hope that you are eating your meals together, ask them what they're thinking. Because you're going to want to know. It's not going to be, look, these are the kids that change the world because they have solutions in their head. They don't think like the rest of us do. They think completely different. And the problem is that ticks us off because we want them to just give us the pat answer. And they don't have those because they see it differently. So dare to enjoy their perspective. Dare to enjoy the freedom that comes with raising someone this unique. This unique, this different, this out of the box. They are totally their own person. And enjoy the relationship. I remember when Charles came home from college the first time, it was the longest we'd ever been apart. Because we'd always homeschooled. And he came home and he's sitting at the bar and I'm trying to come up with a reason to be in the kitchen because he's there and I want to be where he is. And he's working, he's reading, he's writing something. And I start crying. And I'm really not a crier, but I've become one in my old age. So I'm like, oh, how do I bridge this chasm? I don't know what he's read. We used to read everything together. I don't know where he's gone. I don't know who he's met. And I'm just overwhelmed because I've got this like months between the two of us. And I'm like, where do I begin? I mean, how was your day? I mean, what did you learn? What was your favorite? What do I say? And I'm just crying. And this big kid, he comes over and he goes, Mom. I said, I've just missed you. And he goes, you want to know a secret? I've missed you too. The relationship you can have with your TC is unlike any other. They're not going to have a whole lot of people that are going to fight for them or be on their team. You get to be that person. You get to be that person. Practically speaking, here are some things you can do. Obviously, you can take a shot if you want to. Hug them. They are very sensitive. They need physical touch. Hug them. Tell them you love them. Tell them over and over and over. Advocate for them. Supply their dreams. I think I own over 20 Rubik's Cubes. Did you know that there are different Rubik's Cubes with different speeds? Did you know that some of them have a black thing around them? And some you can get these. I did not know these things. Supply their dreams. Create context. Make your home the home that all their friends want to come to. Make it that way. Create a context. Discuss limits. They don't get to do whatever they want to do, whenever they want to do it, with whoever they want to do it. That's what the culture says they ought to do, but that's not God's way. So teach them limits. Go into their world. We've gone to Rubik's Cubes tournaments. Who knew that happened either? They do. They do. Very interesting events. And let them teach you something. Here is me and Charles on his wedding day. Look, here's the deal. I thought I was going to be behind him in a courtroom. I'm not kidding. If I sit up, he sit down. If I said black, he said white. I mean, this was a great day, right? Here he is after he got his master's degree. And I want to tell you this, too. Not all the time, but many times for that kid, and Dobson has the corner on this information, the synopsis in their brains do not line up like we want them to. It has all come together for Charles after he got his undergraduate degree. Literally. We're trying to push them and prod them and make them something that they're not ready to be yet. If we can just love them and encourage them and read to them. Yes, I read to my kids all through school. We're doing Frankenstein this summer and all three of them are adults. Read to them. Invest in them, right? It's come together for him afterwards. Everybody would have said that he was a failure. And he went to college and it started coming together. And then after, literally, with his first job, he taught himself Latin. He now knows 7 languages. He's currently in Germany learning German, and he's going to teach Latin in Rome this summer. That's a God thing. And I could have killed it. I could have resented him and made him and forced him and shut him down. Don't do it. Don't do it. Okay, I have a couple of things for you. I have for you in here your official self-control button kit. You're welcome. Charles went to VBS one day, one summer, and he came home leading with his shoulder. And on his little shoulder, there was a little red felt cutout with a button in the middle of it with a safety pin. And I said, Charles, what is that? Do tell me about that. And he goes, it's my self-control button. I said, well, do tell. He said, yeah, when I'm feeling that feeling, like I'm going to, that feeling when I'm going to, and I'm, yeah, that feeling. He goes, all I have to do is push the button. The Holy Spirit gives me self-control. Inside, I was saying to myself, could we put those all over you? Like everywhere. There's nothing magic here. But sometimes tools for these kids are really helpful things. So I'm going to give you one of these. I also have for you a card with our outline and a prayer on the back. A place to start for you, praying for you that your TC. Okay? Also, I have my business card and a sticker for you. I have tons of stuff in my community. I have probably 20 videos on TC on that kid. How to deal with them over breaks, all of this different stuff. You can scan that code and it will get you there. I've got courses. I answer questions. I have a Bible study. Because here's what I found out. Homeschool moms are lonely, overwhelmed, and exhausted. This weekend is great. You're going to get a shot in the arm and everything's going to sound possible. And then school's going to start. But you don't have to do this by yourself. And you don't have to do this alone. I want to help you. So you can come and check that out. Also, my husband and I have a podcast, Let's Talk Homeschool. You can look that up. I also have a podcast. I think that's this one, Real Refreshment, the podcast. And I just finished a 25-year project writing Bible curriculum. You can check it out down at the booth at Apologia or go to apologia.com/Bible for more information. You don't even teach the Bible curriculum by yourself. I teach the first half on a video. I know that terrifies you that I would be in your home on a regular basis. But I teach the first half of the lesson, and then you read the second half of the lesson for your kids. You have a TC at your house. Remember your homework. Go to them and hug them the next time you see them and tell them how happy you are that God sent them to your family and how much you love them. God has blessed you. Thank you.